I want to welcome everybody to this week's episode of In the Rough with JB and Golfer Gal. I'm your host, JB, and normally I have Golfer Gal alongside with me, but she is off planning the 2012 THP golf outing and demo day at Grand Cypress. So in her place, I searched high and far and found a suitable replacement, and that is Doug from Golf Tech. Doug, how are you?
I'm very good. Thanks, JB.
I wanted to discuss something, you know, that we've been talking about on the forum this week, and it's about technology and golf clubs. And I know that before we get into, you know, how you guys determine that and everything, technology changes quite often. And as a consumer, the only way to know if technology is right for you is obviously to be educated. Would you agree with that?
Oh, sure.
Well, you know, one of the things is every year we hear the latest and greatest. It's going to increase distance. It's going to make you a better golfer. It's a fairway finder. These wedges are going to spin better than last. Yet there's really no way to determine if that's really true for you. Now, it could be true for an individual, but it may not be true for you as a golfer. And we found an article and a video that Golf Tech had done a couple of weeks back and put it up on the forum, and it basically asked, are your clubs too old for you? Have you changed things? And I found it kind of informative because, you know, it really did. It isn't, what's the best way to put this? It's not about your clubs are too old, you must replace them, and that's not really Golf Tech's philosophy. It's more about let's find out if the new technology is right for you, and let's find out which technology works best for you. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, it actually is. You know, the set analysis is just what you described, JB. Technology does change all the time, and you know, manufacturers make some great claims, and they make some great products. I don't mean just to say claims without substantiating that, but the bottom line is that technology something that you can benefit from? And we also know that a lot of people over the years, you know, they pick up clubs at various points in their golf game, so they don't necessarily buy an entire new set at one time. They might pick up their irons at one point, and then maybe it's a year later before they get a driver and they get a hybrid or a couple wedges in between. I mean, yeah, so they don't necessarily always make the entire purchase at one time. So
you should read you should meet our listeners. They tend to buy them two or three times a year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's always good stuff out there, and I think that's where set analysis can help. It just helps to identify any weaknesses that might exist within their current set. And when I say weaknesses, I'm referring to any kind of gapping issues where maybe they've got a club that's missing, say, on their wedges. They're missing a wedge gap that's creating some yardage issues for them. They may still be able to benefit from an additional hybrid instead of an iron in their bag. We even find that a lot of people have driver lofts that aren't right for them. And so the set analysis is really a good way to identify, look, if I'm thinking about buying new clubs, what should I be looking to get fit for? Because maybe I've got a fairway wood that works perfect for me, so I don't need to touch that one. Maybe I need to get a new driver or a new set of irons, whatever that would be.
Now, you touched on a couple of things that were interesting, and I want to break it down in points. But one thing I do want to point out is this isn't brand specific. I mean, you guys aren't loyal to anything. You'll fit them for what's best for their game.
Absolutely true, yeah. We have no axe to grind. We don't care what they buy. You know, our whole process is very comprehensive. It's fact-based, and we try to keep our personal opinion really out of the process. It's really just comes down to the bottom line. You know, this club is going to work best for you, or in the case of a set analysis, you know, the driver that you have right now, regardless of what brand it is, it may not be performing well for you right now because it may not be the right match. And so then we just go from there and make recommendations accordingly.
Now, you touched on something a couple of seconds ago about, you know, finding out where gaps are in the bag. And one of the things I wanted to touch on, and I know it goes through the entire bag, but in recent years, as technology has changed in irons and they've been able to move weighting and get higher ball flights through shaft technology and lower center of gravity, we've seen stronger lofts. And some will dispute that it's nothing more than marketing and they're building it for irons to go further. And when you talk to experts, they'll tell you it's the other way around, which is they found this new technology. And because of that, a 9-iron can go 9-iron height and be an 8-iron loft. And whatever the case may be doesn't really matter. But in terms of newer irons being stronger lofted, a lot of people can't are going to develop a gap in their bag. And one of the issues that I see a lot is amateurs carrying for years, they've always carried the 52, 56, and 60 wedges. Whether they need them all or not is to be determined, but that's the wedges they carried. And now with pitching wedge lofts being lower than they've ever been, a lot of them end up with that gap at that 48 to 50 mark, and this can kind of come in and tell you where the gaps are.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, good point too, JB. There's no question that the as clubs have gotten stronger, it's really totally rechanged the entire set configuration if you think about it, right? I mean, the old traditional three-through pitching wedge with a a sand wedge, that's obviously out the window. With the way the sets are made up now from a loft standpoint, you've got pitching wedges that are generally, in many cases, 45 or even 44 degrees for the stronger lofted sets. So you do have, that the 52 doesn't fill in that gap. It doesn't cover it up. So you do need depending on what your pitching wedge is, you're going to need a 48 to 50 degree gap wedge, or sometimes called an A wedge. And then, same thing on the other end. If my 6-iron has 27 degrees of loft, which is a very strong lofted 6-iron, considering sort of some of the more traditional blade irons that a lot of the clubs the tour players are playing, you see 6-irons that are still around 31 degrees. So no question the 6-iron of some of these sets really is equivalent to a 5. Well, if that's the case, then what does that make my 4 and my 3-iron, right? They get even stronger and become much more difficult to hit. And we know that, the longer a club gets and the stronger the loft is, typically the average player does start to have more trouble with those clubs. And so now that brings in the need for the hybrids. And that's one of the things that we do in the set analysis is really try to determine what is the right set makeup for that player to make sure that they're not only not creating gaps, but also make sure that they're getting clubs that are going to be the easiest for them to hit and perform the best for them.
Now, I can tell the listeners that having gone through a Golf Tech fitting, I've actually gone through an analysis as well. And it was kind of shocking to me in some ways because I learned that the 4-iron in my bag was not really being used and not really needed. I know that's kind of weird, but what I found is I was carrying a 3 and a 4 hybrid and then going to a 5-iron, and the way my gaps worked out, I actually eliminated a club and was able to add an extra wedge, which again helped me through the set analysis on the back end of filling all the gaps in my bag.
Yeah, and that sometimes can happen, right? It depends on everyone's individual needs and where their strengths and weaknesses are. Some people, they love the wedges and they're all about trying to find a way to utilize their wedges, maybe get an additional wedge in there, and saving that club on the low end of the set is a good way to do that.
Now, when it comes to the swing analysis and the set analysis and finding gaps, you touched on how it works with the driver and finding the right loft for the driver. What do you find is the norm? When we did our recent demo day, it seemed like a lot of the players were using lofts that were too low for them and creating not only a gap there, but creating a more difficult shot. What is the normal, I guess, the norm and what you guys are finding when it comes to measuring drivers?
Well, a couple of things on the drivers. One thing we know is that based on ball speed, there's certain lofts that are going to perform better than most for most players. And there's always other variables that go into it, but your swing speed is somebody who has a 9-degree driver loft, for example, in order for that club to perform well for them, they're going to need a swing speed of, probably at least 100 miles an hour with their driver's swing speed. If they're less than that, they're not likely to get enough ball speed to create some lift and get the ball up in the air. So that's one of the things that we look at. The other thing is that we also know from our testing, that there's an appropriate amount of loft that should occur from whatever the driver loft is to the next fairway wood. And so if you are a player with a, let's say, a slightly slower swing speed and you're smart enough to know that you don't need a 9-degree driver and you may be playing an 11 or 12-degree driver, that's great. That club is probably performing well for you. But then the other side of that is within that first fairway wood. And in many cases, we find that people don't really even need a 3-wood as their first fairway wood. If I've got an 11 or a 12-degree driver, my first fairway wood might actually be maybe it's a 4 or a 5 wood, something more into the 17, 18-degree loft in order to create a club or in order to have a club that's, again, going to help me get the ball up off of the fairway. I guess the way I would liken it is this. If I've got the problem with my driver, if I don't have enough swing speed to get the driver up in the air with a stronger loft, that same thing is going to occur with a 15-degree three wood, that off the fairway I may not have enough swing speed to really get that ball up in the air. And so we help people identify what is the proper gapping, not only from the wedges, but all the way from the driver working down from there.
It's funny you touched on the part of the fairway wood, because for years playing something higher than a 10.5-degree driver was considered less, you know, kind of like playing the regular shaft, you know, the ego stead in, and you didn't want to do that.
Exactly.
But in today's day and age of shaft technology, it really has nothing to do with the loft of the driver. I mean, obviously that's part of it, but it's a full equation. Loft of the driver, launch of the shaft, flex point, and everything else to create the optimum launch numbers, and consumers can get that and find what the optimum launch number is, whether it's a 12-degree driver or a 9-degree driver. You're still going to end up with trying to find that optimum launch number to create the right distance. And you touched on the fairway, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I literally just made this change to a 17-degree, they call it a 3-wood, but it's really more of a 4-wood, 17-degree fairway wood. And I noticed that I get the ball much better, or I get the ball higher off the deck far easier than I was with the 15 degree.
Absolutely. I think, you know, going back to the comment you were just talking about, JB, and the whole, you know, getting the right club without regard to what the loft is, I try to get our students to know, and people who come into Golf Tech, I try to get them to understand that, you know, the number that's on the bottom of the club is really irrelevant. It just doesn't matter. It's just a number. What really matters is what is the loft and what is your impact characteristics. So, you know, somebody who has a slightly downward angle of attack, you know, the static loft on the club, the number on the bottom, is going to be less than it would be, is going to be less than that at impact if they have that downward angle of attack. So for those players, even with higher swing speed, they might perform better with a higher or a more lofted club, because dynamically that 12-degree driver might still perform as if it were a 10 or a 9 or a 10-degree driver, depending on not only the club characteristics you described, but also their swing dynamics and what their angle of attack is and what is their release point. How do they release the club? So, you know, all of that goes into it. So hopefully, and I know you guys, your listeners tend to be very intelligent, very smart golfers, so I think they probably get a lot of this already. But, you know, it's so important get beyond your ego. Don't worry about what's on the bottom of the club, and find a club that's just going to perform right for you without regard to what it says on the bottom.
You know, we Golfer Gal and myself go to quite a few of the PGA Tour events, and we watch these fittings that the pro players go through before putting a driver in their bag. And one of the biggest things they discuss is loft. And while it used to be the norm for the pro players to go with a 7-8, you know, degree drivers, and then we get the mentality as amateurs, well, I want to play with the pros playing, that now you go out there and you see guys, some of the longest hitters out there playing 10.5-degree drivers, even 11-degree drivers, because it's all about dialing in that distance. And like you said, depending on where they come, their angle of attack, it's about playable loft anyway. And, you know, one of the biggest ones that I'll talk about is Dustin Johnson, who's one of the longest hitters on tour. He plays, they actually take a 10.5-degree head and move it towards the 10-degree mark. And most people in their head, they're like, oh, it's Dustin Johnson. He's playing double extra stiff, 7-degree driver to get that kind of distance. And he's really not. It's a 10-degree head. He fluctuates between stiff and extra stiff depending on the shaft he has in that week and what he's using normally. Right now it's an extra stiff Mature.
Mm-hmm.
But you're exactly right. The number on the bottom really means nothing. It's all about the launch.
Correct, yeah. And then I think the more people understand that, the better chance they have of getting into a club that's going to perform well for them. And again, that, you know, we begin to identify that through the set analysis, and then that's the first piece. And then, you know, the set analysis identifies what we should be looking to get you fit in. And then the second step of that is actually the fitting process, where you then actually get fit for the best club that takes into all of those things into account.
Now, you know, you talked about the fitting and what comes next. And I want to touch on that as we move still with the driver, because recently at the 2011 THP Golf Outing and Demo Day, we had our launch monitor out there, and you know, we were working with people with drivers and shafts, trying to just give them, find them the optimum numbers. What's the best numbers for them? And one of the things I noticed was how many people play a shaft that is too stiff for them. And do you find that during your fittings and set analysis that their ball flight is significantly too low because of the shaft flex?
Absolutely. I think the two things that I would say, if we tried to identify the two biggest flaws we see relative to drivers, it'd be drivers lofts that are too strong and shafts that are too stiff. And it kind of goes back a little bit to the ego that you mentioned earlier, right? We have these egos, and you know, it's a little bit hard to let go of that and say, well, maybe I do need a regular flex or a 10.5 or an 11 degree loft. But you know, that shaft that's too stiff, it doesn't load properly for you in the downswing. You're not going to get the effect of forward shaft bend at a drag impact. And that forward shaft bend is an important element in a golf swing that allows the club to help get the ball up in the air a little bit better. Only way I can benefit from that is if I load it properly in the downswing. And in order to do that, it has to be the right flex for me. If it's too stiff, it just never loads, and therefore I don't really get the benefit from that at impact.
Now, one piece of that puzzle is obviously there's no standardization, so not all shafts are created equally to begin with. So what you might be playing a stiff in one flex could be a regular in the other, or an extra stiff even. So when it comes to an actual driver fitting, what would be the downfall in somebody playing a shaft? And I know you touched on it, but what would be the results that they could actually see an eyeball that they're playing a shaft that's too stiff?
Well, typically a shaft that's too stiff, the most common things are lower ball flight, and if anything, a tendency for ball flight to be a little bit to the right. Those would be the more common things.
For right-handed golfers.
For a right-handed player, yeah. They would tend to miss it somewhat to the right, and they would tend to hit it lower. And they may also see some of the other things from a launch perspective. They might see a lower spin rate with that stiffer shaft. So if they're looking to get more spin, a softer shaft can help them with that. So you're looking at lower ball flight or launch angle and misses that are somewhat to the right with lower spin typically.
Now, I've gotten off on a tangent, obviously, for my driver fitting because it's something we recently just did with a lot of THPers, and I want to get back to the set analysis. Out of the thousands, hundreds, millions that you guys do, how often is somebody right where their gaps and everything are equal and they're in good shape?
You know, it's less than you would think, or I don't know what people think, right? I mean, some people think, well, maybe it would be 50%. I would say it's probably, when you talk about somebody who has every club dialed in, where they've got all their clubs that are performing well for them, they've got the right technology, they've got the right lofts, the right lengths, flexes, everything is performing well, that number is fairly small. Probably 10 to 20% of the time we're going to find where everything works well. But I think the other thing I'd want your listeners to understand is this is not that if you go through a set analysis, you know, our goal isn't just to say, well, we're going to turn that into a club sale across the board. We're just trying to find opportunities that are going to help you perform better. That in some cases, it might be every club in your bag, but far more often it's not. It's maybe a few things here and there. It could be just even a lie angle adjustment. Sometimes we do testing in a set analysis to determine if you have the right lie angle for your swing. So your clubs may be, your irons may be fine, but maybe we need to adjust the lie angle or have that done in order to get it to perform a little bit better. So, you know, it not many people have everything dialed in. Far more often we're going to find some things along the way that need to be done, whether that involves one new club, several new clubs, or just some adjustments to your current clubs.
Well, and I think that's the benefit of going to a place that, as you put it, doesn't have an axe to grind. I mean, the goal is not necessarily to sell somebody equipment. The goal is to make them a better golfer. Now, you touched on something just a second ago that I kind of wanted to focus back on, and that is, you know, lie angle adjustment. But even taking that a step further, when we get our clubs as regular consumers, and let's say you buy the latest set of TaylorMade TPMB irons, okay, you're kind of assuming and believing the company that the lofts on the bottom and the numbers are correct.
Yeah, exactly. And in many cases, they are. I won't say that they're always wrong, but occasionally, I mean, anytime, I don't care who it is, and I wouldn't single out anybody, but anytime you deal with mass production and high volume business, you're gonna find that some sets come out better than others, and so that's also part of our set analysis process, is just to help you determine if what you have is accurate or not. And to be clear on that, we have a couple of not all of our centers have loft and lie machines. Many of them do, but not every single one of them does. So in some cases, we wouldn't actually be able to confirm that for them. In some cases, we can. That would be something the listener would want to call when they call their the center, the Golf Tech for the set analysis. They want to determine what they have available there. And then the the other thing is, if particularly we mentioned the club you mentioned, if you go with something that's forged, if it's been in your bag for 6 months, 8 months, a year, whichever it might be, those lie angles do change. And particularly if you do any practicing off of mats at all, where you're hitting under maybe the underneath surface is a harder concrete type of surface, though your lies will bend, your loss can change, and again, I don't want to confuse anybody. The set analysis isn't where we come in and make all those adjustments, but those need to be looked at some point during your players. Your listeners should be looking at those to make sure whether that's through a set analysis or just a normal loft lie check.
Well, as we've kind of gone through the set analysis, and I'm not paid to say anything. I went through it. I believe in it. I think what Golf Tech does with No Axe to Grind can help every golfer out there. Where can they check these out, and how much does it cost?
Very good. Well, go to golftech.com, and they can find their closest center, the Golf Tech center that's closest to them. The process is 30 minutes. We actually have a promotion going on through Father's Day weekend, and it's $49 for the set analysis, so they can get that at a great price. It takes about 30 minutes, and it just gives them the peace of mind to know that, hey, either my clubs are right, or I've got some opportunities I should be looking at that might help me score and play better down the road.
I'll put it out there for our listeners. For anybody who we see it every day, these people coming on and saying, what wedges should I play? Help me fill up my bag. Go through this. We're not talking about a lot of money. We're talking about half the cost of a wedge in most cases. Make sure you're buying the right thing and that the investment counts.
Yep.
I want to thank Doug for coming on the show this week. As always, it's always a blast when we have Golf Tech come on and talk about the technical side of equipment and how it can help them, as well as talking about the swing a little bit. But we definitely want to have you come back on again. And maybe next time we take reader questions and kind of go through and find out what the questions they want answered and bring it right to you, and you can answer them for them.
That'd be a great idea. I'd love to do it.
Thank you, and we will be back next week with our U.S. Open preview. So for myself and Doug filling in for Golfer Gal, we hope you enjoy our show each week, and we will see you next week. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.